Today with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to have you back, it's good to have your company. Where are you listening to us? Keep telling us now, because I am fascinated. I don't know what it is, but I am still strangely fascinated where you all listen to us. All the people all over the world who are downloading us. And again, thank you so much for the download, and thank you for spreading the love and spreading the word. If you're a regular listener, welcome back, it's good to have you. If you're a new listener, we'll go through the rules. It's not really rules, but I'll kind of let you know what's going to happen. Firstly, at this point, I'll say hello, Jack.
Hello, Tony.
And I'll say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Tony.
And you will figure out now that there's three of us, and we're now going to talk about the news, rumours, gossip, a few headlines and everything else from Motorsport News this week, of course, which Jack is the national man of. I like to think of you as Jack. That's the way I see it. You are like the national man.
Cheers, pal. I'm just a work experience boy, but that's so nice that you would point that out.
Jack, I can't believe we're doing this. This is the second time we're doing this, and you've brought it back up again. Now, right, there's one bit of news that we didn't cover last week. I feel a little bit bad, but before we break into the big international stuff, right, Jack passed his bars test.
He did. He kept tweeting sneaky pictures, didn't he, of his GT86? And he seems like he scraped through.
So, Jack, what percentage did you get?
Oh, that'd be telling, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's why I asked.
90.
You got 90%. Now, right, you and I have both worked at rally schools and stuff over the years, and we've all had to deal with billies, as we call them. And we all know normally when we get journos in, we normally give them a plus 10% anyway.
You didn't turn up with your own race boots, did you, Jack?
I did, actually.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, basic error.
Schoolboy error.
It's the first experience error. Where you identify yourself. You're a target.
You instantly lose 5 points. At least.
Crack on, lads. I can take this all day. It really doesn't bother me that much, you know. I've got my rally licence, I'm going rallying, and there's nothing you two can say to me that's going to upset me.
Mate, listen, mate, I'm glad that you're in a happy place with it all. Good on you.
When's the debut, then? What's the car? When's the debut?
At the minute, there isn't one, unfortunately. I did have something lined up, which is why I kind of rushed through getting my bars test and kept it relatively quiet, but that's fallen through now, so I'll just be looking.
So if there's anybody listening with a car that they'd like driven by Jack Bennion, then they just need to get in touch, don't they?
Well, that's a surefire way to get no responses to something, isn't it?
What are you trying to say, Jack? What are you alluding to?
If you don't put it out there, no one's going to come back.
We nearly got Ryan out on the Pirelli.
If we can't get a winner of the Pirelli out on the event that he won 10 years before, then there's not much chance of me, is
it? Listen, we got very close. We got very close, a lot closer than probably you or many of our listeners realise, actually.
Yeah, that didn't surprise me.
Yeah, you see, we got very, very close. I was there. I was out on the Pirelli. I visited Ditches. 3 times. But anyway, we're not talking about that. That's way gone when. We're going to talk about Rally Portugal, that went on last weekend, which, without going any further, massive congratulations to Chris Meek. I know we're going to probably do that in any other business a bit later on, but we need to address the fact that it was Chris Meek's second win. He controlled the event from pretty much the minute he went into a stage, from the minute he went over the finish ramp. Fantastic drive. But that's not what the story seems to be coming out, Jack, especially this week in an MN. The headlines are Rally Portugal, organisers defend decision to let stage run despite accidents and fire. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, quite interesting. Quite a big story coming out of the event that the organisers have chosen to defend their role in what happened of the fire of Hayden Paddon and Oit Tanak. If you haven't yet seen it, you should have, because it's all over social media. There's plenty of videos you can watch. But Paddon had a bit of a crash. Call it a bit of a crash. It was quite a big one. Ended up with his I-20 in flames, and Oit Tanak crashed in the same place. But the stage organisers didn't close the stage as quickly as some people thought they may have done. We think Tanak would have been into the stage anyway, even if they'd have stopped the stage pretty much straight after Paddon's car ignited. But when it did ignite, it set the forest on fire, and the stage officials did let the stage run for quite a while before they stopped it. So there's been quite a few people come out and had their views about when the stage was stopped and how quickly it should have been stopped.
Right, I'll come to you at this point. You've done course car, you've been on rally safeties commissions and things like that, so I will naturally come to you on this one. We can only compare like for like, but I can't imagine all things that are going on in the world that an event like that or an incident like that on an event in the United Kingdom would have been allowed to continue.
I think what we don't know is how long the stage was allowed to continue for, because as soon as there was knowledge of the fire, I mean, obviously that should have stopped the stage instantly. Paddon went off the road. He said he pressed the OK button because at that point he was well off the road. There was no immediate danger to anybody else. But then obviously the car was engulfed in flames very, very quickly when it set light to the ground around it. He couldn't then get back to the car to press the SOS button, and suddenly there's a major situation. But from what we're led to believe, there was helicopters in the area, there was marshals in the area. So at that point you would think they'd have relayed the message. Now whether the stage would have been stopped in time to prevented Oitanax accident, we don't know that, but you know, you would hope that as soon as there was mention of that fire that they did actually stop the stage. But obviously we don't know how long it took to do that, and the other reason, the other thing we don't know about is why there was nobody actually slowing Oitanax down and trying to prevent his accident happening.
I don't know whether any of you guys have seen the in-car. I've watched the in-car back a couple of times, both of Hayden's and also Oitanax, and then Mads Osberg, who I think was next through after Oitanax, and there was this massive compression which just seemed to launch the car to the right of the stage. Jack, I don't know whether have you seen the in-car yet?
I've seen it in the car.
And it's one of those things that, you know, again, I still get, there was a lot of people around, and I don't know whether, sadly, we all know this, when a rally car does go off, the people do seem to come from nowhere, and don't get me wrong, most of it, you know, 99.99% of those people are there because they want to try and help the crew get back on, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a lot of people around there, it seemed, once Hayden had got out the car, and there was plenty of people trying to move him away to safety and things like that, and yet there was nobody on the inside of the corner. Have you guys looked into that? Have you guys managed to have a chat with anybody on the event about that?
No, I don't think we've discussed anything about that. I didn't actually see on the inside of the corner whether there was people there, but from the social media videos, there seemed to be plenty of people around, and I know there was a radio point that was quite close. Another thing to point out, another element of the story we have got, is that, you know, the organisers and the clerk, of course, did have access to pictures from a helicopter, so they could see the fire. They knew it was there, and you know, they had access to these two helicopters, apparently, they had access to. So they did kind of see the blaze igniting, and yeah, that's another interesting part of the story as well.
I suppose the hero of all this has to be Oitanax. He was a man who unfortunately went off second, and he kind of rolled into where Hayden Paddon's car was unfortunately well alit at that point, and he managed to get clear of the car, but then also managed to go back and rescue the car. What you guys have, I'm sure you guys have got something on that. Is this? There may be some picture. I think the car was slightly damaged, the DMAC WRC car, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've got a little sidebar on that. It's an interesting little story that Oitanax's dad is a fireman, so he's kind of putting out fires. And I also wonder why it always happens to Oit, because, you know, last year he was in a lake, and this year he's in the middle of a fire, so I don't really know what happens next to Oit. But yeah, he managed to save the car, which Malcolm Wilson's very happy about, because M Sport haven't really got shells back at the factory, but they haven't got actually any running WRC spare cars at the minute, because they're dedicating their time to 2017. So Malcolm said, you know, he wouldn't advise anyone to run into a fire and pull a car out, but he's very grateful that Oit did, because that's another, you know, that's a car saved and a bit less trouble for Malcolm. He hasn't really got any full cars left.
Right. Whether anybody gets into a rally car when they're driving for DMAC, or when they're driving for M Sport or whatever, whether they're aware that there's no other cars available, does that act as a source of motivation to go and save your car?
I just think it's human nature, isn't it? You try and protect the car. I mean, these cars are getting on for £500,000, and regardless of whether it's insured or not, you know, you definitely try and save the car. I mean, it must have been horrible for Hayden to stand there and watch the car burn, and obviously Tanak thought he could save it, and he did ultimately. So you know, great job to him to save the car. He's caused us fair fair share of damage over the last years, hasn't he? So maybe this is one step back into the good books at M Sport.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it'll be marked down in the plus column as opposed to the negative column. But speaking of negative columns, a bit of a tenuous link. I'll admit that. But I mentioned right at the top of this is that congratulations to Chris Meeker. Now, one person who doesn't appear to be passing on the good wishes to a WRC winner is Jos Capito and the people at Volkswagen, right? Don't see sour grapes.
Well, for me, there's definitely an element of sour grapes. Volkswagen have dominated the World Rally Championship for the last few years, but it isn't the Volkswagen World Rally Championship, and it's great for casual viewers, for even people involved in the sport, that Chris Meek comes in and wins, or that Hayden Padden comes and wins. Well, that's what we want to see. We want to see different people, different cars up there on the top step of the podium. And it just seems that every time Volkswagen don't win, then we get the criticism from either one of the drivers or the team. And they've benefited from the road position situation. Latvala has had his own issues this year, and that allowed him to take a dominant win earlier in the year. So it swings around about. What goes around comes around. They benefit from it as well as losing from it. But it's really no different to what we've had for years. We had tarmac experts coming in for one-off rallies and taking wins. We had the Scandinavians in both Finland and Sweden coming in for one-off events and winning on occasion, like Tommy Mäkinen, for example, in an Escort Cosworth back in 1994. So we've often had people who aren't contesting the full championship winning events, and I just think it spices things up and it's good for the sport.
No, absolutely. I think the other thing is as well is that, I suppose for Citroën, obviously Citroën kind of took that semi-sabbatical when they went circuit racing, and yes, they are coming back with a full factory effort in 2017, but I think everybody needs to feel a little bit of success and say, yes, we are going in the right direction. And I think, you know, a Volkswagen lockout on every podium isn't going to, you know, entice people or make people think that they're making the right decisions of coming back to WRC, are they, you know?
For sure, it's got to be a good motivational tool for Citroën. You know, the Citroën Racing boys, I'm sure, had a spring in their step on Monday morning to see their driver for next year winning a WRC rally. You know, we know Chris has got the talent and he's got the speed, but there's nothing better than to see him winning to motivate those guys for next year's car.
Now, again, not to, you know, I feel a bit like Jos Capito when I say this, not to devalue what Chris did. Did Sebastian Ogier play the long game?
For me, I think Sebastian Ogier tries his best on every rally. I think he knows that whilst the road position regulations are as they currently are, where he runs first on the road for 2 days, he knows it's a long shot. But having said that, he's won how many world rallies has he run from that position over the last couple of years? He knows it can be done, and I certainly think he sets out with the aim of winning. But this weekend, you know, Meek did a fantastic job, and I think to a certain degree, regardless of road position, Meek would have been fighting at the front.
Jack, I don't know what your thoughts are. Now, one man that I think we've all wanted to see kind of kick on, and we all feel that probably should be kicking on now, is are they teammates, Volkswagen 2? I suppose they are teammates, aren't they? Andreas Mikkelsen, who of course finished an excellent second, and again, when I looked at the results and I seen Andreas, you know, he caught and passed, you know, Danny Sordo, and he caught and passed Sebastian Ogier, and again, the question I was asking myself is Sebastian Ogier just thinking of the points? Or genuinely, as Andreas now stepped up his game, what do you think?
I think that's definitely a double-edged sword there, what you're talking about with the two different drivers. I think, you know, we heard what Mikkelsen said. I think it was on the end of Friday. He said, you know, I'm sick of going slow. I think he said, I'm going to drive quicker now. And he went back to VW and worked with his engineer and worked with Jos Capito, and they worked something out overnight that clearly worked on Saturday morning, because he was absolutely brilliant all the way through Saturday. And don't think anyone could deny how quick Mikkelsen was. You know, he only, in the afternoon loop, I think he only lost one stage, didn't he? So, you know, brilliant performance from Mikkelsen on the Saturday and Sunday. Bit annoying in a sense that he couldn't, you know, produce that on the Friday and really give us, you know, another VW sort of, well, I know he finished second, but maybe could have given us a bit of a better battle with Meek. Who knows? But yeah, I think in answer to your question, I think yes, Ogier probably was driving for points. he's very intelligent, and I think we've seen through many times now, he knows when he can win and when he can't. Whether he says that or not is a different story altogether. You know, we know he loves to say before an event he can't win, but you know, I think he knows after the first day or so how much he can push and where he can push to. So I think Ojo probably understood Meek's road position was good, and that Meek, more importantly, was making advantage of that road position. But Meek was also very relaxed and brilliant over the whole weekend. So I think Ojo really had to play second best. Whether he could have pushed Mickelson a bit harder without that puncture, the two punctures he had on Sunday, supposedly, who knows? But yeah, an interesting event all around, I think.
I think we always make reference to high and high corner and things like that. Now, we just made reference to the fact that Andreas Mikkelsen caught and passed Danny Sordo. Danny, very, 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 very respectable fourth, 2.5 minutes ahead of Eric Camalio. Thought did an amazing job, by the way, fourth event in a WRC car on gravel. And, just a very, very mature drive. And he's had a little bit of a hard time, I think, on social media, and people were questioning perhaps the route that Malcolm had gone by bringing Eric in and moving Elvin to WRC2, although it kind of seems to have worked out, doesn't it, Ray?
We talked about it earlier in the year with him, didn't we, that there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders. He didn't have the experience to draw on, because a lot of the other drivers that have come into the front-running WRC teams have normally had experience of a World Rally Car outside the pressurised environment of the main team, and obviously Eric hasn't had that, so he had little experience to draw on. He was put under pressure, and as we've talked about before, once the results don't come your way, the pressure just builds and builds, and it's very difficult to get out of that cycle. But you know, great result for him. I think he was third fastest on one stage as well, so he was fast as well as consistent. And actually, it's his teammate that's starting to look under a little bit of pressure as well, isn't he? Because Osberg was brought in to lead this team, and yes, I know he had transmission problems again, but Osberg's not looking like he's going to put this M Sport Fiesta in first position. Far from it. And I think there'll be a few thoughts and head scratching going on as to who might drive the 2017 cars.
I must admit, I watched the stage ends, and I've read some of the reports and stuff with regards to Mads, and Mads kind of seems to, and I don't know whether this is just from, I think Malcolm had made reference to, perhaps he needs to drive a little bit quicker, or he needs to start looking at a few things, and Mads had kind of fired something back with regards to, performance and engines and things like that, and all doesn't seem well, does it? And it's almost like he's resigned to the fact that perhaps he won't be driving the 2017 car, almost the way he was, I suppose, in the final year of Citroën.
Yeah, having said that, he's obviously keen to improve his tarmac driving. He's doing rallies in his own R5 car, so he's obviously keen to be seen to making the right moves to improve himself. We just haven't seen that ruthless pace from him, have we? We haven't seen the stage times of an Ogier, of a Patton, of a Meek, a Latvala, a Mikkelsen. We know they're capable of very, very impressive pace, even Sordo, Neville on occasions. But we just don't seem to be seeing that from Osberg. Is the car a long way behind? Again, it's difficult to say, isn't it?
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Benyon. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and I did make reference to Danny Sordo before, an excellent fourth place, but his teammates, obviously we spoke about Hayden at the top of the programme, the issues that he had, of course, and I just wanted to, they had a quartet of cars out high and high this weekend, and unfortunately, friend of the show, Seb Marshall, sat alongside Kevin Abring, of course, a busy, busy testing programme with the new R5 car that they're producing, Jack, but not the best of weekends for those guys.
No, two crashes, they broke suspension on both occasions, and Hyundai elected to pack the car up on Saturday night and fix it ready for Sardinia, which isn't too far away. So they weren't allowed, well, I don't know if it's a case of whether they weren't allowed to rally too, but I think the decision was mutually made that they would not go back out on the Sunday. And difficult for Kevin really, and Seb as well, because you know Kev's not got a lot of gravel experience. But then again, you know, you can flip that over and say maybe you know he could have driven more conservatively in order to get that gravel experience. So it's a difficult situation to be in really. But I do feel bad for him that he's come back into a WRC car without too much gravel experience anyway. And then has to drive what I think everyone agreed was quite a difficult rally. So, yeah, difficult one for them too.
I think as well, and again, he's another man who keeps on coming up in Hyundai corner. Of course, as the last of the Hyundai drivers is Thierry Neuville, and we Trevor Agnew and I spoke about concerns for Thierry leading up to the event on last week's podcast, and here we are again. Unfortunately, further problems, Jack. You guys have got a little bit of a story, but by no fault of his own this time.
Yeah, it was unfortunately a miscalculation by the team where the car didn't get enough fuel on Saturday and he ran out in the afternoon. So disappointing to see that really, and disappointing to see you know Thierry setting some decent times over the course of the weekend and not being allowed to really sit in his proper position. You know, he had the crash in the pre-event test before the event, crashed on the previous event in Argentina. So you know he's had a really difficult start to the year after that podium in Monte Carlo. So. Really, really tough one. We know we can set the times and he can be quick, but the luck just doesn't seem to be there for him this year. And how much that's of his own making is only he can tell you, really. But a very tough weekend for him and out of his hands as well.
Now, one thing I wanted to kind of move on to as well is the lower orders, and I mean that with the greatest respect, but the you know WRC2 and Junior World Rally Championship, which Jack, you did an excellent piece on last week, and obviously the DMAC Drive Trophy, which we're going to talk to Gus Greensmith about a little bit later on in the podcast. I just wanted to do a little bit of a roundup, Jack, and as you were so passionate about JWRC last week, I wanted you to take us through the runners and riders and what happened in JWRC, please.
Yeah, I spent quite a lot of time over the weekend watching the event and kept up with what was going on. So JWRC was won by Simone Tempestini, who did a few events last year. He had some brake trouble over the course of the weekend and incurred, a 40-second penalty for being late to one of the stages. So he'd initially lost the lead to Martin Cocci, and he also had problems, and Tempestini was catching him anyway, to be fair, and probably would have took the win anyway, but Cocci had some problems on Sunday, which allowed Tempestini through. So even with those brake trouble, he still got through. The other people we talked about last week were Lucas Pieniezek, who won the junior ERC on the Circuit of Ireland, and was someone we were quite looking forward to seeing making his JWRC debut. He had quite a major off, unfortunately, quite early on, which was sad to see him go out. And OC Baby had so many problems that you'd have to write a list longer than a piece of papyrus at hold, I think, punctures, drive shafts and stuff like that. So he was another person who was ruled out as well.
Right. I wanted to come to WRC2 with you, and the reason why is that there's a couple of guys I'm going to talk about in a second, but I made reference to it before when I was talking about Eric Kamali, and people were, you know, raised their eyebrows with regards to Elvin being seen to be pushed to one side. But Elvin is now, across the world, seem to be deemed to be the fastest man in WRC2, which seems it seems bizarre that this time last year that he was in a WRC seat and perhaps didn't have, you know, the confidence to move him forward, and he took a step back to go forward, but now he seems to be the fastest man in WRC2. Do you think that's been more luck, or do you think that's been by design by Malcolm?
Obviously Malcolm took the decision to demote Elvin, if you like, and you know, none of us wanted to see that, but whether that's what spurred Elvin on, or whether it's just he's done more mileage without maybe so much pressure on his shoulders, but something seems to have changed in him, and he does seem to have developed as a driver. You know, we talked about Chris Meek, for example, how he's recently developed, and he seems to be, touch wood, a safe pair of hands now. The speed was always there, but drivers, something changes in drivers as they gather experience, knowledge, and confidence. And let's hope that you know, this year has built Elvin's confidence to the point where he can now jump back into a WRC car and consistently compete at the front. We know his speed isn't lacking on a good day. It was probably just the consistency, but certainly in the WRC2 car this year, he does seem to have found that consistency of pace. So, you know, let's hope we see him back in a WRC car next year. And the other thing I just wanted to mention, I mean, we mentioned the two works M Sport drivers, if you like. Tanak himself, you know, we talked about Osberg's, shall we say, lack of pace. Tanak, again, has been very, very quick this year. He's not maybe had the results, but on D-Mac tyres, which, you know, ultimately, it'd be difficult to say that they were as fast as a Michelin. I'm sure that the Michelin should still be, in theory, a faster tyre, but Tanak's been setting, at times, the fastest forward pace. So, you know, both of those two drivers that were demoted from the works team have shown promise again this year.
Absolutely. Now, I want to look at WRC2. It wasn't a great weekend for Elvin. I don't know whether, were either of you guys following his progress?
Elvin, unfortunately, hit a tree stump, which took the front end off. They had some problems on the first day as well, which they couldn't quite identify, and it took them a while to work out what was wrong with the car, and I think they changed a few things on the Friday night, and it came back a bit stronger on the Saturday. But by that point, he was already quite a bit out of the battle because of his lack of pace on the previous day. So it was a shame. I was really looking forward to it because it was going to be the first chance we were going to get to see a proper works M Sport R5 Fiesta against the proper works Skoda Fabia in Tiedemann. So we were really robbed of a proper battle between those two.
Yeah, as I say, that's where I wanted to come to. It was possibly one of the strongest WRC2 lineups that I've seen this year, and that's not to decry anything that Elvin's done already in WRC, but I really wanted to see the Skoda Works boys, and that they're like the you know the reserves for Volkswagen now, aren't they? I think that's the way they kind of see things, and obviously Pontus Tiedemann and Esker Leper. I nearly got it in one.
Esker Pekkalappi.
That's where I was going. I missed the Pekker out. There's a joke in there somewhere. Leave it, boys. But those two guys, I really wanted to see Elvin go toe to toe with those guys because, you know, at the end of the day, I know there's been some concerns from certain quarters with regards to, I suppose, factory teams being in WRC2, and it was always deemed to be a feeder category and everything else. But that's where Skoda have chose to take their cars now, and I suppose M Sport have decided to go head to head with them this year, and that's probably why Elvin was chosen to go and do that job. But I think I seen something with regards to a stage end or something with regards to I think Malcolm had said something to Elvin along the lines, if you are going to take a cut, just make sure there's not a tree stump in there in future, which I think's fair dues anyway. But yeah, listen, before we crack on, we are going to go over and we're going to talk to Gus Greensmith very, very shortly, of course, who's our man in the DMAC Drive Trophy. We're also, I'm quite excited by this because friend of the show and the man who we've been talking about at the top of the program, and who fortunately had, you know, from the sublime to the ridiculous, after winning Rally Argentina, he had the issues of obviously losing his car and having an off on Rally Portugal. Hayden Padden's going to be joining us for the latter part of the program. And yeah, as I say, we can't wait to talk to you about a couple of things anyway, which we've already got lined up. And we know there's been lots of stuff going on social media, and we may even try a couple of things that have been mentioned on there, providing we don't rile him up too much. But he's a man of his word, and he always tells it exactly as it is, which is why we love having him on the program anyway. Right, guys, have you got anything else we want to address before we move on? I've got one more thing that I want to do, so I don't know whether you guys have got anything.
Well, we'll let you go with your one more thing, and then we'll see.
Okay, this is something I did a little bit of searching around, and I kind of inadvertently found an interview with regards to M Sport's 2017 car, and it's out there. The story's out there. You can go and look it up. But supposedly the reason why the test car has not been seen yet is because it will be based on a new model. Now there's this that story's been supported by an article, I think, by Martin Holmes. I think you've seen something, didn't you, Ry?
And if it comes from Martin Holmes, then you know, that's a very good source, a man who's been around the World Rally Championship for, I hate to think, but as a co-driver back in the 70s and 80s, as well as a journalist, so it's certainly a man who you sit up and take notice to. And he's written an article that next year's M Sport car will be based on the new, unyet seen Fiesta.
which is why nobody's seen it yet. And I've read the article, and Malcolm's quite confident that they've been here before. They did it with the Focus, obviously, when they first took over the programme from Boreham. They ran the Escort WRC cars for a year or so, and while they were developing the Focus, and at that point, a lot of the development was actually done physically on a computer as opposed to having body shells. They didn't even have body shells then, so he feels quite confident that they're not going to have any issues, so... There you go. There you go. Anyway, Jack, you've got something else there?
I think we've pointed out Willer Rallycross was a good thing to talk about. You know, it's going to be another instalment of Loeb versus Solberg, and the first one on UK ground for quite a number of years. So it's going to be nice to see those two going up against each other and seeing, you know, who can conquer Lydon.
Yeah, as I say, I'm a massive fan. Obviously, I've got a little bit of background in rallycross, and Lydon is we always call it. It sounds a cliche, but it is the spiritual home, and I do love going to Lydon. I'm unfortunately not going to be able to go to Lydon this weekend, and rallycross is growing, and it's going exactly the way IMG wants it to go. And I've said this before. My main concerns is we need to encourage more people to actually get involved with it, because I'm just really, really concerned when you've got such a big sponsor, that Monster Energy are, and they put an amazing amount of support into rallycross, and they sponsor the championship, and they sponsor Petter Solberg, and they sponsor Liam Doran, and I think there's a few other bits and pieces that float around for other drivers as well. And I just hope Monster keep showing the love. I know Red Bull are in there as well with the Hansons and stuff, and supporting the Peugeot program, of course, which Sebastian Loeb's part of. But as I say, I just hope that other commercial people do jump on board and see it for what it is, because it is very much the fast food of motorsport. Jack, we're going to go and have a little chat with Gus Greensmith next, but after that we're going to lose you, because then it's Ryan and I are going to be speaking to Hayden Patton. So I suppose at this point we should probably do your any other business.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, no problem at all.
So Jack Bennion, the floor is yours.
Excellent, thank you very much. Well, I'd like to point out a few dates this week. I'm not going to get caught up in Tony's trap of saying today or tomorrow or whenever, but when you listen to this podcast, just be aware that this week it's Hannu Mikkola's birthday, three-time RAC rally winner and 1983 WRC champion. So I thought it would be quite interesting that we'd link to Hannu and his birthday, and obviously a massive legend in the sport, very famous for driving Audi Quattros, and some people might even remember his Escort Mark IIs back in the late 70s. So nice to point out that it's his birthday, but also a bit of a sad one that it's almost a year since we've lost Erik Karlsson, who's another three-time RAC rally winner and very famous for driving Saabs over the years. I think he was even nicknamed Mr. Saab, wasn't he? And very, very famous driver. I think 19 international victories altogether. So very, very, very famous driver, and someone who we should point out, RIP Erik, really, almost a year after his death.
Absolutely. It's one of those things. I remember putting some stuff on our Facebook page last year, and again, you don't think of a rally Saab without thinking of Erik Karlsson. My only other business, I've got three or four pieces of any other business, so there's part of me that wants to do all mine in one go, or do I let Ryan Champion do his now? That's the question.
Hey, well, Tony, we're playing with your train set, so do you want to give us one now, or do you want me to give you yours?
You can give me mine if you want. No, I'm going to do one now. I want to take my hat off to a man that I've kind of, he is a man now, I suppose, although he always looks about 12 to me, Oshan Price, who, fantastic drive on the DMAC drive. Fiesta Trophy, and Gus is going to talk to us more about what went on during the weekend, and he was very much in the forefront of it. But first time out in the car, first time out in Portugal, I think he did it in the juniors last year, didn't he? First time in the DMAC Drive Fiesta Trophy, and acquitted himself really, really well, and I completely and utterly doff my cap to him, because he is such a lovely, lovely guy who has never gave up. And it kind of gets used very, very flippantly and thrown around now by people in rallying, because I think the Petter Solberg thing way back when he created his own WRC team, but he hasn't given up. He's still working on programs, and it's fantastic to see him out there.
Showed his maturity, I think. You look at what Ocean's done in his career, and you know, he's spent a lot of years now running at the front of championships. You know, even last year when he turned up to JWRC and no one really knew what to expect, and including him, didn't know what to expect of his pace, and he was right bang on there and would have won in Portugal if it wasn't for all his trouble. So I think, you know, this weekend was a completely different mindset for him. Turned up, Bernardo Souza and Gus Greensmith were very quick early on. He kept the car in the middle of the road, looked after it, identified that, you know, maybe straight away he didn't have the pace in the new car, but built it up over the weekend and, you know, stayed in it, where some other drivers maybe would have gone like hell trying to catch Greensmith and Souza. And, you know, he drove really intelligently, and he definitely, you know, deserved to be there at the end. And unfortunately, it was a crash from Souza on the power stage that cost that give Ogier the win. But brilliant driver weekend, like I say, and really showed a lot of maturity, I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, one of my other pieces of any other business, and again, is it UK centric? No, it's kind of not. It's Irish and UK and everything else. A little bit of a hero of mine. I seen a press release come out.
I know what this is, and I'm really excited about this as well because I rang him up before.
I'll finish my sentence now, Jack.
Well, good, because I'd like to know what the both of you are talking about.
Okay, well, I am very, very excited the fact that Eugene Donnelly.
Yes,
is coming back out to play because Eugene Donnelly was kind of very much at the forefront with the Celica GT4s, and then obviously the Corolla, which you see, he seems to be in about forever. I think I'm very, very excited to see Eugene Donnelly back in a rally car.
Brilliant.
And what it's on? I nearly said the Circuits of Ireland. Then it's not. It's on
Donegal.
And So, right, you must have done rallies with Eugene Donnelly. You must have done rounds of BRC.
Quite a few over the years, yeah, particularly Manx, Ulster rallies, that kind of thing, because obviously his focus has always been on tarmac, although he's a quick gravel man as well, but obviously his focus has always been on the Irish Tarmac Championship, and, yeah, spectacular performances over the years, like you say, in terms of the Corolla and the Celica in a Subaru as well. And he actually had a quick spin in his Fabia WRC at the Autosport Show for years back as well.
I forgot he had the Fabia WRC. Yeah. So, and he was a man who was, I think he was very, 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 very involved with getting Craig Breen out on the Circuit of Ireland. I'm sure.
He was. He told me a lot about that earlier. Lakeland Tyres is his company, and they obviously helped put Craig's deal together, and he's been very close to Craig's career for a long time now. So, that's actually one of the things that give him the bug, really, and got him wanting to come back out in a rally car.
Do you know what? I find that amazing when you've got guys who have gave so much to the sport, i.e. by putting, you know, their own money in and sponsors and stuff like that, but then come back and help other people. I think there's a lot to be said for it, because there's a lot of guys who don't really do that, and I think it's fantastic. But as I say, Eugene Donnelly, I can't wait. And even better, I used to love the stage end, or the interviews, certainly, with his brother Charlie as well. Charlie Donnelly was always very, very funny in all the interviews he did. But there you go. So, yeah, Eugene Donnelly's coming back. That's my any other business. So, gentlemen, this is the bit where we now go to a cheeky break, and Jack and I are going to come back with Gus Greensmith, who's going to tell us all about what happened with him in Rally Portugal, and then we're going to have another break after that, and then Ryan and I will come back with soon-to-be legend, as far as I'm concerned, in the WRC, and probably beyond, Hayden Patton.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to Absolute Rally, our friend of the show and our man in the DMAC Drive Fiesta Trophy, who's fair to say he's had probably every emotion that he could experience over the weekend. Gus Greensmith, welcome back to Absolute Rally, mate. How are we feeling?
Yeah, it's good to be back for the second time today.
Subtle as one of those rocks that you possibly clipped. I think it's
That's the one.
Yeah, God bless you. God bless you. Thanks, Gus. We got away with it. We it was all smoke and mirrors. Nobody realised that we'd recorded this now for the second time, but still, here you go. 45 seconds in, you've blown the smoke and mirrors, but that's fine. Mate, if it makes you feel better, that's the most important thing, because let's be honest, it's been a trying all weekend for you, hasn't it?
It's been a difficult one, but it's been very positive, so it's not all bad.
I was about to say, we looked at the, you know, Jack and I spoke over the weekend and we were watching the stage times. Day one was a cracker. You know, you were fast as 4 out of 7 stages. You seemed very much in control. You knew what was going on. But stage 7, as ever, just, I suppose you start getting a little bit comfortable. I don't know whether you were feeling comfortable or not, but you're on the bum.
I think the line went dead.
Oh, apologies. I was making reference to the fact that you were fastest 4 out of 7 stages on day one, and the 7th stage is the one that kind of bit you on the backside a little bit.
Yeah, it was a positive day. We had our plan, and we went out with 6 news first thing on Friday morning, because we knew that's when the conditions were going to be in, well, the best during the day. So we thought, put some new tyres on there, make the most of them. And stage one, I definitely did that. But we had actually some problems on stage one. About 3Ks in, the water temperature gauge came on. So we had to back off and let the temperature cool down a bit. We carried on going. And then we found a good rhythm. And then I think we were 7 seconds up on Ocean, 12 up on Bernardo. So we jumped straight back into the lead in the morning, which was good. Stage three, I had a bit of an experience. Made my notes compared to how they were last year. But the surface had been changed to improve the road conditions. So it was a bit slippier. So I was going a bit too fast through the corners, overdriving, but then corrected that for the last stage of the morning loop, and we took 2 out of 3 fastest times of the morning.
I was about to say, you just made reference to something there, which you didn't in the first interview, ironically, but you just made reference to something there with regards to temperature gauge, and I find that really, really interesting, that you're now in a position where you're starting to have to think about managing a car.
Well, seeing the water temperature come on, because there were so many big rocks that you just hit just because they're just on the road in Portugal, I thought, as soon as I saw it, 1 or 2 Ks, and I thought, either this must be a joke, the water temperature already. So I chilled it out a bit, and then once the stage opened out and started getting faster, the temperature controlled itself, and I didn't have the problem for the rest of the day, so it was a bit odd, but I had to back off just to make sure that the temperature wasn't getting too high.
Because I think that's, you know, we spoke about this before, but, you know, these little cars are not necessarily designed for these very, very rough events, and there is a lot of driving round potential issues, isn't there?
Yeah, some of the rocks were the same size as me. There was I remember one in Ponte de Lima. I was going down the straight, and it was a long straight. It must have been a 500 meter straight, and I could see the thing from as soon as I came around the corner. I spotted it and thought, I couldn't work out if it was a toddler or whatever it was. It was massive. So I had to drive on the silt around that when I got to the bottom.
Yeah, I think when it's got its own postcode, I think that's classed as an island. I think that's the way to work it, but that's the way to work it. But
it was a similar size.
Yeah. But again, you know, day one was so positive, and you know, how do you pick yourself up when you get to the last stage of day one? You know, you pick up a double puncture at the same time at the end of the last stage of that day. How do you pick yourself up, Gus? What do you have to do to kind of pick yourself up for day two?
Well, it was one of them. You just think, God damn it, I can't believe this happened, but it's happened. So straight away, just forget about it and move on for the next one, because it's rallying. You never, ever give up. Anything can happen. Proved on the last stage of between Ocean and Bernardo. No one expected to see that happening, but it did. So that just proves anything can happen. So they didn't give up. And then the first of the street stages, stage 8, straight after the stage where we had the puncture, we were fastest. So whatever I did and whatever Alex helped me do worked.
Gus, when you, you know, the point system now is quite weighted towards stage times as well, isn't it? So, you know, that's something that you're always thinking about in your head. When you sort of, you've had all your problems, you've had your 2 driveshaft issues and your punctures, how hard is it to sort of get back on the pace again? And were you really pushing on the Saturday and the Sunday to try and set those faster stage times, or were you just trying to bring the car home at that point?
Well, I saw no reason to just to sit steady and hope something happens. Fortune favours the brave. So straight away on Saturday morning, we went for a big push. But I knew as soon as I came out the first stage of the morning that I'd overdriven, and the times proved that. So in the second stage, I knew exactly what I needed to do, and then I was fastest. And then Amarante was my favourite stage by far of the weekend. incredible stage, and I thought I can really, really go well here because I've put so much effort into watching the onboard through this year. And then, we got the puncture, and then the drive shaft went, so we had to call it a day. And the Sunday was actually the first stage of Sunday, Vieira do Minho, I think it was by far the best I've ever driven a rally car by a long way, absolutely long way, because we had a great first split, 5 seconds up on everyone, and then I caught a car ahead and lost 3, 4, maybe 5 seconds behind him, and then pushed again. And then the drive shaft went, but that, to me, that was one of the best stages. I think it is the best stage I've ever driven.
Oh, excellent. You must be really encouraged by the pace you've shown over the weekend, because I know, you know, it must be really difficult to look back on a weekend where you've had simultaneous punctures and two drive shaft failures as positive, but you know, you've come up against, you know, Ogden Price, we talked about, is, you know, quite a well-known guy now and did very well in JWRC and the two events he did there last year, and Bernardo Tews is a WRC2 front runner in the past, so you know, to come up against those guys, you must have been really, really pleased with that.
No, the pace was spot on. It was, when we were going into the event, I knew whereabouts. Well, I had my guesses of where I thought it was going to be, but you never know until you get to the first stage. But I had full confidence I could be right up there from the beginning. I probably assume the majority of people didn't think that, but we did manage to do it, and all that hard work that we put in through this year has definitely paid off, and it will continue to keep paying off, I hope.
Yeah, the thing about Portugal to me is the thing that is synonymous with Portugal to me is that Faf jump. What was it like going over that on Sunday? And you know, how did you plant the car coming up to that jump? Because you know, from us at home, we just sat there watching the cars flying over a jump. Well, how does it feel inside the car, and how are you positioning the car, and you know, sort of stuff like that?
I didn't make the jump on Sunday. My car went on the first stage.
Oh, did you not get to it?
No. I only did. I didn't even finish one stage on Sunday without a problem.
Oh man.
Work experience, Eric.
I did do the jump last year, and I properly creased my pants because I thought, it won't be that big. Got to it, only it went down one gear. Soon remembered that it's pretty big.
So, Gus, it's great to hear you're still in fine spirits. Moving forward now, what's happening next? What are we doing in preparation for? I assume your next event, is it Poland, the next event for you now?
Yeah, the next event for me is Poland, and we've got a two-day test the weekend before. But we've also got, which will be good, get back in the car and obviously try my best. But we've also got something planned with the guys I've been working with to create the videos, which is going to be an almost a Top Gear-style race between three motor vehicles and a particular place in the UK, they're starting to make the scripts for that. So that should be some good fun once we get it going.
Does this relate to the fact that Jack passed his bars test last week, Gus?
Oh, bloody hell, I hope not.
No, that's all right then, because Brian and I have just been debating why he's got this licence, so I'm glad you said that. If you were the kind of went quiet on me there, I would have had suspicions that you put him in a milk float.
Well, thanks for
listen, Gus, stay in contact, mate, and as I say, whatever we can do, we'll be there for you, and as I say, we really appreciate you being our man in the DMAC Drive Fiesta Trophy this year, and we'll keep Everton cross for you, and we'll speak to you before Poland anyway.
Brilliant, thanks very much, dude.
All the best. Thanks a lot, Gus.
See you guys.
Take care. Bye bye. And that was Gus Greensmith, folks, and as I say, we appreciate Gus giving us his time. Yes, we did have to do it twice, in case you're wondering what we were talking about at the top there, but still, there you go. Jack, you've got some fans in the Greensmith household there as well, haven't you?
Me and Gus go back quite a while now. He's one, you know, another person I interviewed many, many years ago when I was starting my career. So, you know, I've known Gus for a long time now, and we do keep in touch. I did drop him a text on Sunday to say well done to him. So, nice to see him doing well. And, you know, you've always got to support the Brits, haven't you? So it's nice to see him going out there and really showing his pace.
No, absolutely. As I say, it's good that we've got these guys that obviously could come back to the programme and let us know what's going on, because I suppose the other thing is that, you know, we appreciate that there's people listening to the podcast all over the world, and you know, we are in the sport, and we're kind of in the sport by default, but there's also people who are fans of the sport that are not necessarily in it, so to kind of open up, almost, I suppose, take them behind the scenes and show them what goes on and the mindset and everything else is also a big part of what we try to do anyway. And as I say, we really appreciate Gus's time. So Jack, You've done your full stint this week, mate. Well done.
Yeah, twice.
Twice, yeah. Okay. So I nearly got away with it, didn't I? But yeah, you had to tell Gus at the top, and Gus didn't even get to 30 seconds in because I just looked at the timer without mentioning it. We did the whole top of the show all over again, and nobody made reference to it, but you had to tell Gus, didn't you? You tried to bury me, Jack Bengen.
Gus knew already, didn't he? So I didn't really tell him because he already knew. So
yeah. Yo, you actually gave him the challenge of mentioning something in the actual interview. Well,
all right, I might have done that.
You see, that's what happens. You see, everybody thinks I give you a hard time. Now they listen and they go, oh, okay, that's what Jack does as well. Okay, I get it now. Listen, you've been promoted next week anyway. And the reason why we're going to have Ryan joining us very, very shortly. We're going to have Hayden Padden coming up, which I can't wait to do. And but next week, Ryan is going to be on his way to Rally Barbados. And we're going to have another man who did record a piece with us this week as well, who is Frederick Arlen, who we might as well make reference to. Now, Frederick Arlen, of course, who's been a front runner in WRC2, and he's certainly making the British Rally Championship a very, very honest place for people like Elvin Evans this year. And he's currently leading the championship. So we're going to be talking to Frederick Arlen in next week's podcast as well. And Jack's going to be the main man again. He's going to be there. He's going to be alongside me because Ryan is travelling as ever. But the following week, we're going to have him from Barbados, which is going to be quite exciting. So yeah, there you go. Right, Jack Bengen, thank you very much. Same time, same place next week. And we're going to have a little break, and we're going to come back with, all being well, with Hayden Padden, Ryan Champion, just to finish off the programme. We'll even have Ryan's Any Other Business.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter @absolute_rally.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back once again. I say that with a giggle because everybody knows now. Hayden Padden, thank you for coming back for a second time this week.
Not a problem. I've had a chance to polish up my answers there, so I think I'm lucky.
Good man. Now, I want to start with the good stuff. I want to start with Rally Argentina. I want to congratulate you first and foremost on that win. Now, obviously, I know we've just had Portugal, but the elation of winning Argentina, how long did that last for?
To be honest, it probably never really sank in, because we were obviously straight on a plane back home to New Zealand after that, and it was a pretty whirlwind 10 days in New Zealand with a local rally there and all the media and PR stuff, and then obviously once we were back to Europe, it was straight into preparation for Portugal, so never really ever sank in, and obviously we just keep looking forward rather than backwards at the moment.
Of course, but you did have a unique alarm clock when you came through arrivals, of course, when you got home.
Yes, we're obviously expecting a couple of people to be there, but not a couple hundred with a haka as well. So, especially at 5 o'clock in the morning, that was certainly a bit of a special moment.
Was there any alcohol in use at that point in the airport? You know.
No. Everyone was fully sober. I think everyone was on coffee and caffeine was about as much as it would have been.
Okay, good stuff. Now, we had, and you may be familiar with Trevor Agnew, who, former PWRC World Champion co-driver, and he does some stage M work now, and he does a lot of mind coaching and things like that. And he was on the programme last week, and we were talking about the power stage on Rally Argentina, and how he felt that perhaps psychologically Sebastian Ogier thought he had done you, and that's how you managed to take so much time out of you, not to put too fine a point on it. Did you feel there was psychological wars going on? Did it feel like that from, certainly obviously from what went on the day before and things like that? Was it a psychological warfare, do you think?
Yeah, but I think it was a two-way street. Obviously we had a bit of a falling out the night before where I saw a whole new side and set that I didn't really appreciate, so I guess alone put a bit more fire in my belly. And, you know, we just focused on our own job with, you know, many different techniques that I've been sort of picking up over the last few months, just to, you know, press the reset button and worry about the, you know, the moment that we're in and not worrying about the result. But, yeah, like yourself, I've always asked the question, why do we take 11 seconds out of them on a power stage? You know, that just doesn't happen. So the only thing I can put it down to is that we put them into a false sense of security when you took such a big chunk of time out of us and thought he had it in the bag. And luckily, we were able to bring something out of the bag and counter that.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I say, you know, that's one thing that, you know, Seb Ogier is renowned for, isn't it? The power stages, he kind of owns them, and I think we were all taken back. Did it shock you how much time you took?
Oh, incredibly. You know, even once we went over the finish line, I knew we'd done the best job we possibly could, and when John said what our time was, I knew it was 7 seconds slower than what Seb did on that same stage last year. Okay, the conditions weren't the same, but still, initially we didn't think it was enough. And then when we saw the timing board and there was like 11 seconds difference, we sort of had to take two or three different looks at it to make sure we weren't seeing things.
I think the other thing as well, I think what's important is that it smashed that kind of Volkswagen dominance of the power stages as well, hasn't it? Because that's something I think that, as a rally fan, I think we were all concerned that, you know, Volkswagen have had this dominance almost of power stages, and to see another manufacturer right at the top of the tree was also quite refreshing.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're certainly closing the gap, particularly from my Hyundai side. We're seeing this year now that we're a lot more competitive, and okay, we're missing a little bit of consistency, and that's what we need to work on, and we're just still trying to find out the exact things that do and don't work with the car. But I think we're at a point now where it's so close, and, you know, we can see that with likes of Seb's and Volkswagen's comments that they're now complaining a lot more about the road position, and, you know, a lot of that's down to the fact that we've closed the gap to a point where any advantage we do get in the road position, we can now get in front of Volkswagen, whereas in the past, even when they've been up the front, they've been able to still win rallies and you know, hold up the margin. So, you know, I think the situation's sort of starting to change a little bit.
Yeah, comments are coming out. Obviously, we heard the comments, and there was a wry smile, I think, all round when I think comments came out with regards to Chris's win. How did you see Chris's win?
I think he did a great job. You know, I think of all the gravel rallies that we do throughout the year, Portugal's probably the one that's got the least sweeping factor. So, yeah, okay, there must have been some advantage here, and Chris admits it on day two, but on day one, you know, even when we were a second on the road, I didn't think it was that bad. So he did the job that he had to do with the tools he had and with the road conditions he had, and I wouldn't have done it any different if I was in his position. So, you know, he definitely deserves a win.
Yeah, again, I think we've said this before. Well, we certainly said this before. Nobody heard me say it to you before, but I still believe there's a big thing that the likes of yourself and Chris, having done national rallies and things like that, have worked towards being that first car on the road, and it was always seen as a badge of honour, whereas perhaps some of your colleagues have gone through the one-make championships and obviously, you know, one-make championships straight to Junior World Rally Championship and then possibly to WRC2, haven't really been in that position where they've ran first on the road, and I think that's where the mindset is probably a little bit different.
You probably hit the nail on the head, but, you know, growing up in the Junior Championship for 5-6 years sweeping roads, and whenever you had the number one on the car, it was certainly an honour to have that. And New Zealand's probably the worst place in the world to be sweeping roads with the amount of gravel that we have. But, you know, we obviously compete in a sport where there's just so many changeable conditions, from the roads to the weather, and so many different factors that determine where on the road's best place, and trying to find you know, equal conditions for everyone just simply won't happen. If you want equal conditions, you go circuit racing. You know, that's why we compete in the sport. So I think things just have to be, well, I think things have been blown out of proportion recently, and I think we just need to stick to the basics of what rallying is, and you know, for me, watching my heroes win world championships growing up, you know, it was always the fastest guy was first in the road, and maybe not necessarily for the first 2 days, but at least for day two, three, it was in classification order, so you could make back a bit of time if need be. But yeah, I think all this talk of qualification and marble drawers and all this other silly stuff is not what rallying's about, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to ask you about Portugal. It was I've watched back that corner probably 15, 20 times. You probably watched it more back, and I've watched it from two or three different ink on boards. And that compression seemed to catch everybody out. Was it, obviously, I think it was a second pass, wasn't it? It's just something that people have been taking a cut, or what? How did that compression form?
Well, after looking at it from standing on the side of the road there afterwards, you could see there was a big culvert underneath the road, and it was obviously just the softer part of the road that had cut out. And I've gone through and reviewed everything. I've gone through and reviewed all the recce footage, the first pass footage, the footage from the stage last year, and there was absolutely no indication that there was going to be a hole formed there. And it was just one of those things that you have in rallying sometimes where you just get caught out by an obstacle. And we weren't the only ones. Obviously, always got caught out, but every single car that went through before the stage got stopped was nearly in that same bank. They're all bouncing out of that compression. And the only difference between Oys and I was that we're just carrying that little bit of extra speed that bounced us even further into the bank, which caused the accident. So, yeah, unfortunate, and it's obviously I made a mistake, but it's the hardest thing to swallow with it all is it didn't feel like a big mistake, and we obviously had the consequences we had. It's very harsh for the team, I feel.
Absolutely, it is kind of once you know the sublime to the unfortunate, ridiculous, really, isn't it? You go from giving them a winning car, to unfortunately, to having to find you a new car. How is it with regards to body shells at the moment with Hyundai? Obviously, you've got the 2017 car that's all being developed. Obviously, there's going to be a new car for you for Sardinia.
Yeah, there'll be a new car. There won't be any problems there, but it will be a tall ask for the team. Like at the end of the day, this is a 1 year car, so we don't have oodles of spares lying around, so you know, the next couple of weeks is trying to get all the parts together. That's probably the biggest thing. And you know, I'm lucky to be part of such a good team because I know that they'll put everything into it to make sure we're there with a better car in Sardinia. And of course, I'll try and help out a little bit on the side, but probably more get in the way more than anything. But
I was just about to say, yeah, you're gonna be roped in.
Yeah, well, I'm actually on the way to the workshop now, so I've got my arms ready to get ready for the broomstick and start sweeping the floor and maybe make some coffees or something.
Get the kettle on. Obviously, you've got a little bit of background of building Hyundais as well recently. I know Ryan is fascinated by this car you've been involved with over in New Zealand Rally Championship, right? You've got a few bits you want to ask Hayden about, haven't you?
Yeah, obviously, you're going through a lot of new cars at the minute. What I mean is different types of Hyundais, and you've been involved in developing this AP4 car for New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit more about the concept and what the car is?
Yeah, basically the concept sort of was put together by Motorsport New Zealand and CAMS in Australia as a way to form a new sort of class that's financially feasible for national rally teams in New Zealand, because you know, unfortunately an R5 car is simply too expensive for our markets. You basically need $500,000 New Zealand dollars to get one, and that's before you even do an event. So this AP4 car is half that price. It's still a lot of money for local teams, but it's a lot more achievable. But it's finding a way to replace the old 10, 12-year-old Mitsubishis and Subarus at the top of the national championship at the moment with modern-looking cars. And we've already seen since we started this project, there's now Hyundai, Skoda, Mazda involved from a national importer level. And there's the opportunity for another 3 or 4 as well. So obviously that brings more support, more enthusiasm back into the sport. The cars look great and sound great on the stages, which is good for the spectators. And the concept of the cars is a little bit like the maxi cars in Argentina, but it's been redesigned with a bit of a spin on some of the WRC design. So quite a simple car, and you know, I think it's the way forward. We've got to look for ways forward in our part of the world, and this is certainly one way.
I definitely agree with you. I mean, even for our own British Championship, we're lucky there's quite a lot of R5 cars there, but there's an awful lot of people that can't afford an R5 car. So a great project. We've seen you out in the car a couple of times. You took a win earlier this year in the car. Will you be driving it again later in the year?
Unfortunately, not again this year. Obviously, now the WRC commitment is pretty full on for the rest of this year with the testing, but we've got a 3-year project with that car, and now we're just trying to develop a better team around it to run it for the future. The idea is to have some other young drivers driving it later this year into next year, and build the program up with more cars. And you know, we have a lot of support and good support from Hyundai New Zealand, so we're using what we've done already as a base to build it up into something quite good over the coming years.
Now, it's an incredibly busy time in WRC, as you said. Obviously, you're in the unique position of developing this one-year car, the 2016 I-20. When does the focus move from 2016 onto the new 2017 car in terms of development?
Well, I think within the team, the focus is already on the 17 car. And you know, we're not really developing any new parts or anything for the 16 car now. All it really is finding that information, testing what is and isn't working. So we're just sort of having to collate all that information again, starting from scratch. But at the factory, they're already, they're well into the designs of the 17 car. We're hoping, we may be driving it in the next month or so. We're a little bit behind where Citroen and Volkswagen are, but at the same time, we haven't started from a clean piece of paper like them. We've got a lot of information from this year's car that we can utilise and give us a bit of a jump start.
Now, obviously, a big change in rules for 2017. Importantly, seeing more power, which I guess every driver wants, but increased aero, electronic centre diff now as well. How do you think the cars are going to be? Do you think they're going to be more spectacular?
Yeah, it's obviously hard to say because I haven't driven it yet, but I think from a spectacle side for the spectators, whether the car's going sideways or not, the extra speed is going to add a lot more excitement. So they're obviously going to be faster. They're going to sound a lot more aggressive. From what I hear from talking to the other drivers, the centre diff's making it a bit easier for the driver to drive, particularly in the twisty parts. And the aero, well, I think in the fast rallies, of course, the aero is going to help a lot more. But I think an extra 80 horsepower at your foot is going to mean that you can drive the car more sideways because you've got that bit more power to pull you out. So I think it will promote more aggressive driving, but just how spectacular they're going to be or how sideways they're going to be on the stages is yet to be seen.
But so not too much development left with the 2016 car, but obviously it's still a relatively new package. Is there more you can get out of the car during the year without necessarily bringing new parts to it?
Yeah, definitely. We're working a lot on the suspension at the moment, particularly with the rear of the car. This is where we're sort of struggling a little bit for stability and grip. So every test we do, we're constantly trying some different damper settings and valving and things in the rear just to try and find that window. But the rest of the car, the front of the car, the chassis, the engine, all these aspects are working very good. So if we can get on top of this other part, then we won't be far away. But, we're not looking for big things either because the speed of the car is not that far off. So we're just looking for baby steps.
Good man. Well, obviously, we're keeping you from the workshop now, and obviously, I know some of the lads at the workshop. So, those coffees don't make themselves, Hayden.
I won't be making him a coffee. He doesn't probably drink coffee anyway.
Oh, he does. He's a big coffee drinker, big Starbucks man. He is.
Is he? Oh, we don't have Starbucks here.
I know.
Not now, isn't there, anyway.
He gets quite agitated by that. Believe you me. Whenever he comes home, the first thing he does, you'll see he's checked in at a Starbucks.
I'll keep that in mind for the future.
Yeah, you've actually answered the question though, Hayden, because we were talking yesterday, Tony and I, and we thought you'd have people to make coffee for you nowadays, but you're still making it for the team, so that's good news.
No, I don't drink coffee or tea, so it's easy.
Okay.
So you make really, really bad ones so nobody asks you. I know that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what a good coffee or tea tastes like, you see, so that's if they nod their head and make me feel better.
Good man. Listen, mate, we thank you again for the second time this week, and we'll let you crack on, and then we'll catch up with you again soon. Yeah,
great. Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, cheers. Thanks so much, mate. Cheers. Speak to you again soon. Take care.
No problem at all. Talk soon. Thank you.
All the best. Bye-bye. And that was Hayden Padden for a second time, because the smoke and mirrors are gone now, because Gus Greensmith and Jack sticks me up yesterday when we recorded the first part of the programme for the second time. So everybody knows now we've done this for the second time anyway. But we really appreciate Hayden joining us for a second time. Right, we didn't do your any other business yesterday.
I'm just trying to stop giggling after all the abuse you've had over the last 24 hours, because it has been very funny. I'm sorry. On your behalf, clearly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's the fact when we started, obviously, nobody hears the first part when we start talking to all these drivers, and even Hayden gave me a bit of a hard time, which is fair, dude. So I'll take it on the chin. Your any other business, young man?
Yeah, my any other business. We've got a list of any other business we're not allowed to talk about this week, haven't we? That's unusual. Moving on from that. Any other business? Mine this week comes back to, our leading British driver, Chris Meek, took a fantastic win in Portugal. As Hayden Padden just said, it was an impressive drive. He never put a foot wrong. And what's impressive for me now is the way Chris can control a situation like that. To build up a lead of a minute, but then to start backing off and to drive within yourself to keep the car in the middle of the road is a real skill in itself, and it shows his level of confidence, because you're competing against Sebastian Ogier, and when you start backing off a second a kilometre, it's very difficult to tell the difference between a second a kilometre and 2 seconds a kilometre and letting it slip very, very quickly. And Chris just seems now to have not only the speed, but also the ability to control his gaps. And like shit, it shows his level of confidence. But the other thing is, I think we should, you know, really, really give a big shout out, if you like, to Yves Maton, the support that Maton has shown him late in his career, because I think we all wondered if you know, the boat had actually sailed for Chris Meek. He was fantastic speed all through his career, but never quite managed to break into the top team. It seemed like it had come with the ProDrive Mini, and then obviously that program faltered. And it just didn't look like he was going to get a shot at the big time. But Maton has put his faith in him. Also, obviously Abu Dhabi Racing as well have put their support into both Chris and the Citroen team, and it's allowed him to flourish. And it's, you know, it's just fantastic that we're actually getting to see what Chris Meek is capable of in the top line car.
Absolutely. If I could give you a round of applause for that, because it's like it's well rehearsed. It's almost like you've done it for a second time. That sounded so succinct and perfect. I don't think there's any more that we need to say, is there?
Well, you know, you've got to rehearse these things sometimes.
Probably you do. Anyway, listen, thank you for doing all this the second time as well to Ryan Champion and to Jack, who, of course, has gave me plenty of pelters on social media for the last 24 hours. But I'll get him back. It's all right. It's all good. Listen, it's been great. We're not too sure whether we're going to have you or not next week, because you're off to sunny Barbados. So Jack's going to get a promotion, and poor Frederick Arlen is going to do what he did with us yesterday all over again for next week's podcast. So there you go. It's a little bit of an insight into what's going to be happening next week, folks. We're going to have Frederick Arlen, who caused WRC2 front runner, and also the man that's leading the British Rally Championship, while Ryan goes away and gets a little bit of sun on his back. But hopefully we're going to get him from Barbados at some point anyway.
Yeah, I'll try and do something during my travels, travelling out there around when we record the programme. But we'll certainly try and do something next week, and then I'll bring all the news and results from Rally Barbados the following week. Quite a big British contingent out there this year. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see how Elfyn Evans gets on with the R5 car. He's up against a lot of fast World Rally cars out there, some of them driven by British drivers like Rob Swan and Kevin Proctor. So it'd be interesting to see.
Absolutely. Right, well, thanks, folks. You know where we live. If you don't know by now, I'm shocked. But if you are a newcomer to the podcast, there's plenty that you can go back and visit if you have a look on iTunes, you look on Podbean. But yeah, as you say, if you are a newcomer, if you're unfamiliar with where we live, it is facebook.com/absoluterally, and also on Twitter, which is absolute_rally, and you can find us on there as well and get involved. Obviously, we do bring people in, and the more people that get involved and spread the love, the more things we learn, because we are working towards obviously doing other different bits and pieces as well, and more of that will be revealed as the rest of the season goes on. But anyway, won't be same time, same place for you next week, Ryan Champion, so we will speak to you at some point. But to the rest of you, thanks for downloading us, and we'll speak to you next week.